On the afternoon of July 6th of 2018, listeners who were tuned in to Utah Public Radio heard this song for the very first time. That's Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And it has been the theme song for Undisciplined for, as of today, 300 episodes. Now, back when we started this program, our shtick was a little bit different. When we began, the format included interviews with two people, a natural scientist and a social scientist. And then, as we liked to say back then, we would lock them into a room together and force them to talk about life. On that very first episode, for instance, we welcomed an ecologist who had just published a study that showed a fascinating association between different non-native species in Hawaii. Our other guest was an economist whose recent work had demonstrated a frightening connection between social media and police violence. Those are two very disparate fields of research, but what happened on that day immediately felt special.
So now then, for an introduction, Veronica, I'd like to introduce you to ecologist Karen Beard. And Karen, I'm really happy to introduce you to economist Veronica Poza.
Nice to meet you.
The more we look at things, the more we see that life in all of its different forms is really complex. So I'm wondering, how do you, as scientists, fight against the human urge to look for A causes B sorts of relationships?
My research program, there were three hypotheses kind of set out originally about what are the like clear, very simple relationships between this frog and what's going to happen there. And the results of all of our studies, we've kind of done three studies to look at those three hypotheses, have all not shown those clear-cut kind of answers. And ecology is kind of like that. It's a messy field. There's always hundreds of species out there interacting with each other. And a lot of times the relationships aren't like a super strong interaction that then leads to another super strong interaction. A lot of times it is more complicated and dilute. And then how do you explain that? I think that's hard because people do want a simple answer. And a lot of times our research doesn't necessarily show a simple answer.
That's true.
Well, in my case, we looked at everything from, you know, we tried to make it as simple as possible in terms of collecting data and in terms of how we can frame the whole analysis. But then when you are getting shocking results that are very difficult to explain, in our case, you don't just rely on one particular type of science. You rely on different things. You grab things from criminal justice, you introduce statistics, then you go to psychology. So those are the complexities of the research, and you have to be flexible. And I think that flexible here is a very important word.
What followed was a really interesting conversation about how the research being done by both of these scientists was about how people act when they get new information. And I had a sense on that day that they could have kept talking for hours, but
sadly, because we're almost out of time, I've got to break in and break this up.
Our show is only 26 minutes long, and it fell to our first producer, Alyssa Roberts, to take these conversations and cut them to the exact right amount of time for our broadcast window on Utah Public Radio. Alyssa now lives in Las Vegas, where she's the digital executive producer at Channel 13 News. But I caught up to her as she was on a road trip up to Utah for her brother's wedding.
I'm like behind the Maverick inside my car.
Oh, you're in your car.
But yeah, surprisingly quiet. We didn't know the acoustics would be so good.
When we first conceived of this program, Alyssa was an intern at Utah Public Radio.
I never would have thought that I would be as interested in science as like that show made me.
So when I first asked you to be the producer of Undisciplined, you were like, ugh, science?
Kind of.
I'm learning so much right now.
Mostly I just love podcasts and I was like, yeah, let's try it. Let's see where it goes. And then it was really interesting. Like I learned so much. I think about the show all the time.
One of the shows Alyssa said she thinks about a lot is the one we broadcast on November 16th, 2018, when Karen Loy joined us to talk about collecting microbes all over the world, including in volcanoes in Costa Rica and hot springs in Yellowstone.
You have to be really careful because sometimes, especially in places like Yellowstone, which is a massive volcano, basically, there will be precipitates. So there will be these things that look like solid ground up to the edges of the hot spring, but they're not. So the rule is if there's no grass growing there, don't put your foot there because you're going to break through.
We paired Karen Lloyd up with Jacob Freeman, who uses trash to study the synchronous rise and fall of societies. And their conversation, it was a blast to listen to. But to be honest, it didn't always work out that way. Not often, but sometimes, it was a little bit of a struggle to get two researchers from very different backgrounds to connect. Although Alyssa reminded me that it almost always worked out in the end.
I don't remember a time where I walked away feeling like, oh, we didn't really ever get there. Like, we didn't really ever get them to find something that they had in common.
Back in those days, we generally tried to have at least one guest in person, either at the UPR studios on the campus of Utah State University in Logan, or the KCPW studios at Library Square in Salt Lake City. But when the COVID pandemic hit, like a lot of people, we were forced to figure out how to keep this show going from home. And so we moved to a one-guest format. And this was right around the time that Alyssa moved to Vegas and handed her responsibilities off to another Utah State University journalism student, Naomi Ward. These days, Naomi is the communications coordinator for the Math Counts Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization that provides extracurricular math programming for hundreds of thousands of students each year. And even though she's no longer a radio producer, when I contacted her recently, she wanted to make sure that our conversation sounded really good.
I'm sitting under my desk with a blanket over my desk like I did when we were doing that. Because we weren't in the studio anymore.
That's right.
I remember I would do this and I had posted like a picture of my setup. And my friend Jimena Bustillo, she works at NPR now. She like sent me a message. She's like, oh my gosh, I do this too.
Although the format shift was sort of forced on us by the pandemic, I really came to like it, because it gave our guests more time to explain their research.
We did this one episode with an art historian who talked about a painting or a mural of some monkeys.
That was one of my favorite ones ever.
For a long time, researchers assumed that the blue-colored monkeys depicted on a certain 3,500-year-old painting in Greece were from Africa, which is, of course, just across the Mediterranean. But then along comes an archaeologist and art historian named Nikki Pareja. Her team had shown that the monkeys on the mural much more closely resembled gray langurs from South Asia, not vervets or baboons from Africa.
Our Hanuman langurs from India carry their tails in S shapes and C shapes, and there's of course a range there in between. And then we have vervets from sub-Saharan Africa who also have a range of tail positions, but their tails have different types of postures, and they don't exhibit that kind of carriage as often as langurs do.
But the problem with the assumption that these were langur monkeys is that it wasn't thought at that time that there were trade routes between Greece and South Asia. But there is another clue.
So we had to kind of back up and think, okay, is there any possible way that we can find any evidence for this kind of connection? And the more you look, the more you find. One of the most compelling pieces of evidence comes from the fact that lapis lazuli, that beautiful blue stone, it's got these flecks of pyrite or fool's gold in it. So it almost looks like the night sky. This stuff is amazing. And it comes from one place. It comes from Badakhshan, which is located in Afghanistan. That's the only place in the old world where we have this stuff naturally occurring.
Nikki and her team had rewritten the history books on Bronze Age trade routes based on a study that began by looking at a painting.
I just thought that was so mind-blowing. And that episode really, really stuck with me. I thought that was so, so cool. When I had first decided to do this job, I felt really intimidated by not thinking that I could do anything related to STEM, because I had never felt like I was good at math or science or that it came naturally to me. But I did really like that a big focus of the show was science communication and making STEM topics digestible for lay people. I feel like this job did a lot for making me feel confident that I could understand STEM work and be interested in it.
Our program hasn't just helped producers like Alyssa and Naomi fall in love with science and become more confident about working in STEM fields. It helped me too. And in fact, it was during Naomi's tenure as producer that I decided to take a big leap from being a science communicator to being an actual scientist. And I accepted an invitation to study for my doctorate in climate science at Utah State University. In the first couple of years of that PhD program, I was still a full-time professor of journalism, and I was writing and co-writing books about science, and I was hosting this show as well. And so we went looking for an interim host. The person we found was Shoshana Buxbaum.
One of the stories that always sticks out to me is I interviewed this shark researcher. I remember her telling me that sharks are covered in dermal denticles. So basically, sharks are covered in little teeth. And I was just like, what?
This is the interview you did with Elizabeth Seibert, right?
Yes, yes.
Most shark fossils that people think about are, in fact, shark teeth. And we know that sharks shed their teeth throughout their lifetime. But it turns out that their dermal denticles, their scales, they're actually made of the same material as their teeth and actually have the same genetic underpinnings. So it turns out that sharks are actually completely covered in modified teeth. And so sharks actually also shed their denticles. A shark goes through, like, somewhere between 1,000 and 10,000 teeth in their lifetimes, but on just a square inch of their body, they have that many denticles. We don't have the luxury of saying, oh, we want to work with only shark teeth, because they're pretty rare. And the denticles, because you're going to have thousands of times more than denticles than teeth, are what we end up working with in those kinds of sediments.
When a researcher tells you something that just, like, makes your jaw drop, my favorite thing when that happens is the researcher just kind of, like, tucks it in, like, as if it's, like, the most fundamental basic fact in the world. And you're like, excuse me? Like, what? That's my favorite, honestly.
We were sad to see Shoshana go, but we were also exceptionally proud to say where she was going. She graduated from our program to the nation's most listened to program on science, Science Friday, where she's a producer working on stories focused on health, psychology, and the environment.
Honestly, I will say that, like, you giving me this opportunity to guest host Undisciplined is, like, not the reason, but very much part of the reason that I got my job at Science Friday. And, like, giving me that opportunity was invaluable. And I'm so, so grateful that you trusted me. And truly, without this experience, I would not be at Science Friday.
When I told KCPW producer Roger McDonough that we were losing our host, he had a suggestion. Forest ecologist Nalini Nadkarni. And we figured that was a long shot because Nalini, she's sort of like science royalty. She pioneered the study of Costa Rican rainforest canopies. But to our surprise, she agreed. And for most of 2022, she hosted the program.
I mean, at the basis of it was really Undisciplined. It was crossing borders. It was connecting ways of knowing and different fields of science to people. And secondly, it was about connecting people who might not have access to go to a lecture at a university campus with the world of academics and of seeking knowledge. And so that's really what attracted me. And I felt it was kind of a miracle that I had the opportunity to do that because you had the setup already created. You think about, oh, well, when radio person speaks out or does a lecture or does an episode, that benefits the listener. But there was one particular episode that actually benefited me and my colleagues, and that was an article that was written by Carlos Andres Rio Frio. And he's really concerned with how the world of conservation has not really incorporated the plurality of voices that are involved around the world with understanding and protecting nature. And I realized after I interviewed him that, oh my God, this guy is amazing in his understanding of, you know, what's going on with the indigenous voices that have long understood relationships between nature and human, especially mental and emotional health.
In my work, I ask, like, How is depression in indigenous communities in the highlands of Ecuador? Is it the same that I'm seeing in these big manuals like the DSM, the Diagnosis and Statistics Manual, the way disease or mental illness are described? Would it be the same if I go to a rural community and try to pass like a clinical check, a screening? And the summary of all that work is that no, it is not the same. And one central core aspect of indigenous psychology is precisely nature. They call it Pachamama, Mother Nature. And it's not a thing. It is a whole where human beings are embedded. So that means that standardized tools that we use in psychology won't be able to capture mental health issues in populations like the ones I work with.
And so I contacted him and we've had amazing interactions, and we've actually now brought him in on the board of this national group that's involved with nature and human health. So that was an example of how I, as the, you know, as the radio host, was able to benefit from this, in addition to all the people who listened to that particular episode and realized that, hey, it's not just Western science that's interested in these kinds of issues.
Claire Scott was Undisciplined's producer during Nalini's tenure as our host. Claire is now a journalist working for KSL News Radio. How are you, man? What's up?
I'm good. I was working this morning, so my voice might be a little tired. I was anchoring. So yeah, once I graduated, I got a job working for KSL News Radio, and I was working digital stuff at first part-time, but quickly got offered a position full-time producer.
And once in a while, you jump in and you anchor.
Well, I actually started anchoring when I was part-time, just on the weekends. And now I kind of do a little bit of everything.
How much of your experience when you were producer on Undisciplined, how much does that help what you're doing right now?
It's everything. First of all, I don't think I would have gotten the job I did without the audio experience I had working with UPR and working on Undisciplined.
Before she was our producer, Claire had worked with a fellow USU student named Reagan Edelman to produce a brilliant award-winning short-form documentary about a purportedly haunted, condemned nunnery in the foothills of Cache County in northern Utah.
I was already making up these stories in my head. Like, I was sure I was going to get killed or that something supernatural and scary was out there. Like, I kept peering out the window and being like, ah. But it was literally just that darkness making all of it happen.
So basically, you're scared of the dark.
Okay. Kind of. But here's the deal. Anyone should be scared of the dark when it's that dark. My point is that I can almost understand how so many obscure, scary stories got started.
Because the nunnery episode had been so good, I asked Claire and Reagan to tag team on an episode of Undisciplined. And they did, producing another award-winning episode on what might happen to Utah ski resorts under continued global warming.
Obviously, we did go up together and talk to people who were like skiing, and they were in the parking lot, and that was so fun. There were so many interesting people there. But I also went skiing myself with my dad, because I knew that I was doing this, and he offered, and I was like, of course, let's do it. I'll get some natural sounds. And I used to ski when I was younger, but this was the first time I'd skied in years, and it was a nightmare. And it's funny to look back, because I don't think I ended up using any of the audio of me skiing, because the audio is me falling down the hill and screaming. It was my first run down, and my dad left me, and I was by myself, and it was icy, and I just tumbled the whole way. And I listened back to the audio, and you can just hear me screaming for like 2 minutes straight.
When Claire left us for KSL Radio, Reagan Edelman was the logical choice. And while our other producers stayed mostly behind the scenes, from the start, Reagan didn't want to just produce, but to guest host as well. She was also the first producer we had who was already really into science from the start.
Well, it's really an excellent thing for me because I love science. I am a huge nerd. I love to learn. So being able to just learn about a different topic once a week has been just the best of both worlds for me, because it's able to activate the producer part of my brain
the communications part. And then I scratches that science itch. As you know, I'm a whale nerd. And as I'm sure our listeners know, I'm a wolf nerd because I don't stop doing wolf episodes. But Undisciplined has also helped me really expand my knowledge on climate change, obviously, but also really niche, weird subjects that I never would have looked into, just ranging from so many different walks of science that I didn't even know existed.
What do you think the episode that you produce that you like the most is?
I think that the most excited I've ever been about almost anything was when I got to go to the OSIRIS-REx landing out in Dugway fairly recently, about a year ago.
10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And liftoff of OSIRIS-REx, its 7-year mission to boldly go to the asteroid Bennu and back.
And I was able to go to the practice landing that they did too. So I was able to talk to so many different scientists. It was just, I've never had the chance to interact with so many passionate individuals who have poured so many years of their life into one project.
Honestly, yes.
Yeah.
There's a good portion of time where we're all like, I woke up and I had to write these notes down because something popped in my head. And so all of us have these stories where we're like, yeah, so I went to sleep and I woke up thinking about OREX and stuff we had to do for rehearsal or things that we think about after the fact. So it's all of us. We're all invested in making this very successful and a very clean disassembly as much as we can.
And the excitement in the air was just so palpable. You could tell that this was the climax of something they'd been working so hard on. And the excitement was so contagious. I went full science kid nerd again. I hadn't felt that excited about space since I was 8 years old. And it reawoke something in me. It reawoke my passion for outer space and for all of the cool secrets that we still have to learn. It was just unreal.
That's what we're trying to do for our listeners each week. With physiologists and political scientists, anthropologists and aerospace engineers, psychologists and geneticists, biologists and sociologists and climate scientists and neuroscientists and entomologists and oncologists and chemists and engineers and venomologists. We've done episodes on the physics of fried rice and how humans might soon live to be 150 years old and what space sounds like and why people love dogs. And I feel really fortunate to have been the host of most of these episodes and the executive producer of all of them. But I absolutely could not do this without our team. And so I'd like to give thanks to the team at Utah Public Radio, which produces this program, and to our producers Reagan Edelman and Claire Scott and Naomi Ward and Alyssa Roberts, and to assistant producer Maxim Dorian, to interim hosts Lilini Nedkarni and Shoshana Buxbaum, to guest hosts Dayton Olander, Ellis Julin, Matthew Wapit, and Ashley Rohde, and to Benjamin Tissot, who wrote our theme music. And to all of our guests, something like 425 of them over 300 episodes, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. You know, it's a tough time for science right now. In public opinion polls, Americans still overwhelmingly say they have a lot of trust in science and scientists. That's been true, too, in surveys conducted in countries across the world. But here's the thing. Science can be slow. It takes a lot of very basic, fundamental, and even sometimes boring research to lead eventually to world-changing discoveries. And there are a lot of people out there who don't understand that. And they also don't understand that science, it isn't a business. Not everything can be capitalized and commercialized and scaled and turned into a product that makes its investors rich. In the past few months, we've seen stacks of executive orders aimed at canceling or freezing tens of billions of dollars in funding for research and international assistance. Thousands of scientists have lost their jobs. New restrictions have been placed on research, including bans on studies that mention specific words. Grants have been slashed and grant offers have been pulled off the table. Universities are grappling with how to make up for the lack of research funding. In a recent editorial, the editors of the journal Nature wrote that it is hard to put into words the extent of the damage being done to the U.S. research enterprise, which is of almost incalculable value, both to the nation itself and to the wider world. And you know, I can't tell you that everything will be okay eventually, but I do think it will. Over 300 episodes of this program, I've been amazed again and again at what scientists can accomplish. And sure, you can slow that progress down, but you can't stop it. I'm Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.